Good morning and welcome to our roundtable panel for this day, Thursday, the 19th of June, and it's a pleasure to have you with us. Let me introduce our panel to you. With us, we have WAMC's Alan Chartok. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Joe. It's always great to know that you're here. I mean, you provide such an important part of the station.
Well, thank you.
Just wanted to say that.
I mean, yeah, I concur. The object permanence, and it's just great that you're here and you continue to be here.
What?
No, it's great.
Was that a shot?
No, not at all. No, we're happy that
like
Joe's here.
No, we were worried about the Chartok rule that whenever you say something nice, it's a shot at someone else.
Spain or me? I'm not sure.
You're trying to figure
both.
Out.
Well, there is that. Yeah. I admit it, because Roselle has always said, you know,
yes,
as soon as you say something good about somebody,
it was your wife who pointed that out to me, actually. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Okay. Ray Graff is here. Good morning, Raymond.
Hello.
It's very nice to have you here, Ray.
It's nice to be. It's nice to be anywhere.
Object permanente.
Yes.
And associate editor of the Albany Times Union, or the Times Union of the entire capital region, Mike Spain, who I contacted literally 18 minutes ago and said, can you do this? And he said, yes.
I mean, he flagged me down on Central Avenue.
Pretty much. And I thank him very much for coming in at the last minute as... He's one of the good ones, so thank you very, very much.
Well, I'm happy to be here.
All right, so let's get into stuff and stories that we can talk about. As soon as my computer will load those stories, we'll be able to get off and running here.
Yeah, I have a hard copy if you need a segue.
Thank you. Let's begin with Iraq. President, this from CNN, President Obama said, I'll let you know what's going on, but I don't need new congressional authority to act. President Obama told congressional leaders Wednesday about his upcoming decision on possible military intervention in Iraq. The White House meeting sounded more like a listening session for the top Republicans and Democrats in the House and Senate about options for helping Iraq's embattled Shiite government halt the lightning advance of Sunni Islamist fighters toward Baghdad that Obama is considering. According to a White House statement, President Obama went over U.S. efforts to strengthen the capacity of Iraq's security forces to confront the threat from the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria, better known as ISIS, also once again saying no more combat troops to Iraq. So this idea of I'll let you know what's going on, but that's about as good as you're going to get?
Well, you know, the whole concept of public opinion, see, there's a couple of things here. There's the military, you know, questions that what do we have? What do they have? If we intervene, does that let them off the hook? Does that let the Iraqi government off the hook? And then there's what the American people are willing to do. And you see these lightning shifts of how we're expected to react, for example, to a leak that maybe the Iranians and the Americans would get together. So all of a sudden, the great devil is being portrayed as a potential friend. We saw it in World War II. You know, the government was in close to Joe Stalin, but when it came to the survival of the world, the country did what they had to do. And the Russians, even though people tell me this isn't true, made major contributions to winning the war, if not the major contribution to winning the war. So now you get this thing at the White House. Is he supposed to give away every secret he's got? The New York Times likes what he's doing, and editorially they say he's doing a good job, and he's being moderate, and he's being thoughtful, and he's doing what he needs to do. So I think he's between a rock and a hard place, or an Iraq and a hard place.
Yeah. Mike, what do you think?
Well, you know, you can't ignore the fact that it's midterm elections are coming up, and that has to be on every politician's mind. Everyone is taking positions. They're second-guessing. You know, there's sort of this battle going on between conservatives saying that, you know, we never should have exited Iraq, and others, more moderates and liberals, saying we never should have been in Iraq in the first place. And while they're going back and forth on that, this ISIS force seems to be gaining ground in Iraq. And I think when Americans start paying a whole lot more at the pumps, maybe they'll start asking for more action, unfortunately.
Well, I don't know. I mean, we've been through that before, and we don't seem to ask for more action, do we? I mean,
Well, you know, it'll be that kind of thing, you know, some kind of economic pressure that will force people politically. But there is a lot of criticism of previous decisions on how Obama has handled this, and you know, a lot of back and forth. So there's just enormous rhetoric going on, and I think the public is on the side of Obama and on Harry Reid, you know, and the Democratic leaders who are saying no troops.
Well, Harry Reid pretty much says no nothing.
That's true.
He said this is an Iraqi civil war, and it's time for Iraqis to resolve it themselves. It's not worth the blood of American service members. It's not worth the monetary cost to the American taxpayer. So then, if the president does what the Iraqi government is asking for and lobs some cruise missiles or whatever, is that a problem politically in his own party?
You break it, you own it.
Right.
I mean, that's
broken.
Seems, you know,
you're right.
And also, Raymond, I couldn't help but think that within the profundity of your remarks or what you were reading comes the question, no, nothing. It's a civil war. Let them work it out. What about all the kids who died?
There's remorse about the great cost that the Iraq war has had.
Because it was not worth it now. Was it worth it then?
Well, is this an admission that it was never worth it to begin with? I mean, that's a harsh thing to accept, especially if you're an injured or you know, serviceman, or you're a family member of somebody who died in the war.
I mean, I understand your point, but obviously for the administration, it has to be a fine line, a delicate balance.
Well, you know, Mike Lupica?
Lupica.
Yeah. This morning in the Daily News takes on Dick Cheney, who is being critical of the president's lack of movement.
Yeah.
And says, who the hell is he? You know, this is the guy who got us into this all and put us...
Exactly. That's what's going on. It's a lot of finger-pointing about, you know, decisions that were made in the past. What should we do now?
I really seldom get, like, really fired up when I read things. But that isn't like, that is chutzpah, right? I mean, that is...
I think it's the definition in in the
dictionary.
If you
look that up, of seeing his remarks...
Yeah.
In Iraq, about Iraq. I was somewhat taken aback by that.
Well, I would refer everybody to Lubica's piece this morning because he is really irate about, you know, the sort of cheapness of this. And I really don't always love his stuff, but I did today.
And he was he in Iraq?
Lupica?
No, Dick Cheney.
Did he go to? Did he visit Iraq?
Yeah, I thought he was, but maybe not. Maybe I'm making that up. Anyway, so the ultimate situation here is, you know, we keep waiting for a decision to be made, and with each day we hear of some other, you know, area being taken, some other atrocity, some other horribleness, and so it does seem like time is ticking, right?
It's ticking, all right.
If the U.S. is to intervene in any way with, you know, air support or you know, drones or cruise missiles, whatever, it seems like there's pressure to do that. Either they have to do it or they're not going to do it.
You know,
the weight will probably not help.
It's funny, the political thing here. Now, I quoted Harry Reid saying, nope, no to anything. But it's funny how muted the Republicans were to basically the statement that I don't need your permission. The Republicans remarkably not saying a darn thing about it. Boehner said, I want the overarching strategy here. But he didn't say, well, you don't have any right to do that.
They'll be happy to let him make all the decisions here. And
isn't
if they don't work out, they can blame him. Yeah. And it isn't going to work out.
If he doesn't share with them or enough with them, they're going to blame him for that, too.
It's a win-win for them, you know.
Well, yes and no. I
mean,
it can be perceived as being rather cheap. This is a very serious
Isn't all politics cheap in this day and age?
I'm sorry,
to Washington, it's cheap all the time, right?
Sorry, Ray. I don't know what that means. What do you mean?
There's a cheap shot on every corner. Everything about. What do you mean you don't know what that means?
It is easy to be cynical about the state of politics.
So just to end and to bring some of the points together, Jay Carney. Who is leaving but is doing one of his final White House briefings, is in the White House yesterday, and a reporter was asked about the opinion of the Dick Cheney piece, where Cheney declared, quote, "Rarely has a U.S. president been so wrong about so much at the expense of so many." And Jay Carney took a beat and said, "Now, which president was he talking about?" We'll take a break. We'll be back after this.
Support comes from Hudson Valley Foot Associates, podiatric physicians and surgeons treating foot problems with offices in Ulster, Dutchess, Columbia, Orange, and Delaware counties. HVFA.com. PS21 Performance Spaces for the 21st Century, Chatham, New York, presenting Repast Baroque Ensemble with Dong Suk Shin performing works of Johann Sebastian Bach. June 22nd, 2 p.m., ps21chatham.org. And Paint and Sip Studio, Saratoga Springs and Latham. Local artists for step-by-step instruction in creating original pieces of art, bachelorette parties, team building, and more. SaratogaPaintandSip.com. And Mannix Marketing, Glens Falls, New York, specializing in search engine optimization and internet marketing since 1996. ManixMarketing.com.
But that's a stupid point. Well, I just think...
We're on, and now we're not on.
Yeah, now we're on. All right,
we're on. We're back.
We're back.
You knew we were on. He knew we were on.
No, we were off. You were on for one sentence.
I think what happened is our wonderful engineering staff thought that he was being serious, that it wasn't tongue-in-cheek when he said, oh, we're on.
It's absolutely right.
He knew he was on.
Yeah.
Okay.
My point was to allude that when I came back and I said that was a stupid point.
That we were still arguing. Which, of course, we weren't. We were talking about the weather.
Want to read a letter, Alan?
Oh, yeah. Letter from Tom. He says, George Bush got us into Iraq in 2003, and it's not rhetoric that George Bush signed us out in 2008. That's not opinion.
Is it fair that we keep blaming George Bush?
Well, I mean, everything is tied. The ankle bone is tied to
the leg bone is connected to the
The answer is, it is, of course it's fair.
But it's a digression. Don't you see?
Ultimately,
I mean, to argue about how we got in there and all the mistakes we made right up to this point, it becomes counterproductive. What has to happen now, if anything?
No, you're right. No, it's on. I think we all agree on one thing. It is now on Obama's watch.
Absolutely.
He has to deal with whatever the situation is. But I think it's fair to say that we wouldn't have blatant racism in the United States if we hadn't had slavery. So that, you know, that things go from one thing to another. And in order to examine where we are, including Jim Crow laws later on, Freedom Summer, which we heard about on NPR today, and the rest, there are antecedents which count. And when you're evaluating what a president has to do, it's fair to say he has to deal with this because of the plate that he was given. But that doesn't let him off the hook. It does not.
Right.
I agree with you. He's not off the hook. It's his watch now, and he has to make a decision. And regardless of what decision he makes, he'll be facing criticism.
Okay, and Bob called in and said, or wrote in, we all know, at least we should know, that the chicken hawk will stop at nothing to cleanse his legacy, as he knows that history will probably not be kind to him. And, of course, he has his daughter to lead the fight, as he had thousands of troops to lead his, H-I-S, capitalized fight in Iraq. Bob.
All right. So we go to from that story. Well, actually, we just have a moment. Did you also get the letter? I'm sorry. We just got a letter from George. Did you see that too?
I didn't see that one. Maybe you saw it. Maybe it's on this other machine of mine.
Okay.
You know, I have two machines, you know, and one of them. No, I don't have a George.
Okay. So George says from today's New York Times, once you got to Iraq and took it over and took down Saddam Hussein's government, then what are you going to put in its place? That's a very volatile part of the world. And if you take down the central government, of Iraq, you can easily end up seeing pieces of Iraq fly off. Part of it, the Syrians would like to have to the west. Part of eastern Iraq, the Iranians would like to claim, fought over for 8 years. In the north, you've got the Kurds, and if the Kurds spin loose and join with the Kurds in Turkey, then you threaten the territorial integrity of Turkey. It's a quagmire. That is what Dick Cheney said in 1994, and that is George's point. That those were statements made by Dick Cheney in 1994. We welcome your letters, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. Let's move on to another story in the very few minutes that we have left. And, well, actually, Mike, why don't we go to you? I hear there's more casinos in the news.
Always, and I feel like I'm the casino guy here. But James Odato, who kind of is our expert on casino and the awarding of gaming licenses, has a really interesting story today about a letter that was written by the head of the State Gaming Commission. That's the acting director, Rob Williams. He wrote it to Senator John Bonachek, whose district includes the Catskills, which very much wants to get one of the casinos to help a economically suffering area get some jobs and get some money pumped into the economy. And Rob Williams essentially declared that a big part of the decision will be what the constitutional amendment and the whole program was intended to do was to help economically strapped areas rather than better off more affluent areas. And that would suggest in the capital region, where there's still five possible sites being talked about, that Fulton and Montgomery County, which is exit 27 near Amsterdam, would fare well under this logic, and so would Howes Caves, which is in Schoharie County, which is where they are proposing a casino also. And more details are supposed to come out this week about the Howes Cave project. So rather than put it maybe in East Greenbush or just across from downtown Albany in Rensselaer, these projects could benefit from being in a more hard-pressed economic area.
Well, you know, there's another way of looking at that, Mike. Mm-hmm. I've been thinking about that a lot lately.
Yeah.
In fact, I'm going to write about it in my Eagle column this week. I think the voters of Massachusetts are having what we could only call buyer's remorse.
Yes.
You know, which is they voted for it, but they're not happy about having it in their backyard. So where does it get put? Well, it gets put in Springfield, which is a wonderful city, but challenged, and where a lot of people who don't have a lot of assets live. So you put it there because it is going to be accepted there. And so now what I'm worried about is that we know that the number one problem will be people who have very little in terms of their own personal resources will end up having to, you know, get hurt by the existence of these casinos, which will take their very little money away from them. So it's interesting to me that we keep thinking about putting it into places which will accept it, which are rather challenged places, and also that when you add that up, that those people who live there are most likely to get damaged by it.
That's right. The studies show that middle-income and below-middle-income people are often those who spend a lot of time and a lot of money in the casinos. So if you put it in an economically depressed area, while it may bring construction jobs at the beginning and actually permanent jobs for the casino employees and the hotel and the complex, it will also zap out a lot of money, you know, pull money out of people's pockets who live in that community.
Well, I see it all the time. I'm sorry. I see it all the time. I go around to a place.
We're going to take a break.
A place near here. I'll tell you about it later.
Yeah, you'll tell us about the place near here, and then we'll take your letters, and we'll talk about other topics, and we'll finish up this one and move on. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC. Good morning and welcome back to our roundtable panel. And let me introduce the panel to you. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Ray Graff, our newsman and associate editor of the Times Union newspaper, Mike Spain, is here as well. We welcome your comments. Roundtable@WAMC.org. And when we open up that box, we get letters like this.
Yeah, like from Jim. I was in the Army in 1968. Remember the falling dominoes theory and how our ski jackets are made in Nam? I'm a Democrat for now, but agree with Representative Gibson. Keep our troops home, Jim. And then Tony says, area venues like SPAC, Cafe Lena, the Palace, Proctor's would like to book top-line artists, but if a capital area casino deal would allow the casino resort to sign in non-competes, which prevent performers from competing within a 100-mile radius, a common limit, then our local venues lose out. And, Joe, you have interviewed the Proctor's people on this issue.
Philip Morris, who is part of the, Fair Game, Coalition, is the name of it, and which is the top entertainment venues throughout the state of New York who are very concerned about issues. And I think when I say top, it's a 1,000 seats or more, I believe, or something like that, which is a cutoff on the people that they're representing. So that's all very much a part of the conversations that they're having. Again, we welcome your go ahead.
Okay, one more from Jim. I've been joking, Messers. It says here, Messers. I've been joking. Joking at the local coffee shop for months about a casino coming to our little Montgomery in Orange County. Much to my dismay, one has now been proposed for 250-plus acres on the edge of town. The casinos were originally proposed to help economically depressed areas like Sullivan County. But if one comes to Orange County, guess what? No one will drive the extra 30 miles to Sullivan. End of discussion. There are so many casinos on the table in Orange County at this point that it seems likely at least one is going to be approved to our detriment and Sullivan County's as well, Jim in Montgomery.
All right. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Do you want to move on, or did you have more to say on that issue? I know you were starting to say something before we went to the break.
But I forgot.
I also forgot. So here we go. Let us move on to health news in the news, which is always interesting to talk about. And this is a story that's on the front page of the New York Times. Regarding heart attacks and heart attack prevention ultimately. And the headline is In Single Gene, a Path to Fight Heart Attacks. Two major studies by leading research groups published on Wednesday independently identified mutations in a single gene that protect against heart attacks by keeping levels of triglycerides, a kind of fat in the blood, very low for a lifetime. The findings are expected to lead to a push to develop drugs that mimic the effect of the mutations, potentially offering the first new class of drugs to combat heart disease in decades. Statins, which reduce LDL cholesterol, another cause of heart disease, became blockbusters in the late 1980s. Since then, there have been no major new drugs approved for lowering heart disease risk. But experts caution that drug development takes years and that there are no guarantees that new treatment will work as hoped.
Well, look, this is where we're going. It's where we're going with everything. It's all going to be genetics from now on and interventions, genetic interventions. So am I surprised by this? No, I'm not. And it's just a matter of finding out what the genome is in a particular disease and then following up on it. We have it with breast cancer. We're going to be having it as we go. We know some of it. We know that it appears in families for good reasons, because when it's in families, quite frequently, it's not only the fact that you're eating too much steak, but it's also that something in that family is making this kind of thing happen. So it's all good, I think, and I think we're going to be looking back on these times as being the dark ages.
Well, it just proves the reality that statins don't help everybody. They help a lot of people, but they don't help everybody. So there's a whole other class of people that would benefit from this.
Sure. And the debate, I'm sorry, Mike, but the debate over statins is that they deal with the numbers all right. Numbers are lowered, but
people
do they actually deal with the outcomes? And
exactly.
And there seems to be a lot of doubt about that.
Yeah, and the data that 720,000 Americans have heart attacks every year is just astounding.
It is.
Yeah.
Well, but you've got to die of something.
I agree. We're all going to meet the.
Well, let me look at the menu. Let's see. What do you want to check?
Well, what are you going to die of? I mean, sooner or later, people's
could
hearts
could be a
give
bus.
Out.
Could be a heart attack.
People's hearts give out.
That'd be a great Vox Pop topic. What's your favorite way to die?
But when the bus hits you, you have a heart attack. Well, or your heart stops beating.
Yeah, right.
How did we get here? How did we get here?
I may have led us down that
thanks, Mike.
Tangent.
You know, Mike, I wouldn't take responsibility. No. I really don't think.
Was that a shot?
Not at all.
And you know, people who are on statins complain that they have side effects that make them question the value of them, you know, so this is going to at least offer some hope for that for future anyway.
Roundtable at WAMC.org to write to us, and why wouldn't you want to?
No, send your complaints now.
At WAMC.org. I found this story fascinating. I find this whole topic fascinating about the Washington Redskins. You know, there's a lot of different ways of going about doing something, and this seems to be a very interesting way of going about doing something. There is, of course, the Washington Redskins have been under fire for a long time for their name, and critics saying that because of that it is derogatory as a derogatory term toward Native Americans, and the team should be changed. Okay, so for years, the NFL and the Washington Redskins have defended the team's name by claiming that it's a sign of honor and bravery, not a slur. When critics disagreed, the team pointed to a survey showing that a majority of Native Americans supported the name. Making that defense may become harder on Wednesday, a division of the federal government ruled that the Redskins' name was disparaging. The team was stripped of federal protections for six of its trademarks.
Pending appeal.
The ruling was the latest indication of mounting disapproval of one of the league's most established and lucrative brands, and it's likely to amplify a strident debate at the crossroads of politics, sports, and money. So it seems to me, to summarize this story, a lot of pressure on the Washington Redskins. They say, no, we're not going to do anything. Don't, you can't make us do anything. We don't want to do anything.
We've been to court on this already and won.
Yes,
we've been to court. We've won. We feel that we have the support of the Native American community. We're going to go ahead and so forget you all. And then the federal government and says, okay, well, we'll take matters into our own hands and nix your trademarks.
It seems to me this is a loser for the Redskins.
Agreed.
In other words, give it up sooner or later, but the sooner you give it up, because it's indefensible. It's not defensible. The fact is you can't say the New York Jews or the so-and-so, you know, this thing, because if in fact you do that, you are insulting somebody. It shouldn't be done.
Why do I have to agree with you? I absolutely have to agree with you on this.
I don't know, but it's a bad day for you.
It's a good day for us and civility that I agree with you. Look, these things can go too far. If you look at Tampa Bay Devil Rays.
Yeah.
Which is, what, a devil rays a fish, but they had to take devil out of that.
Yes.
That may have been going too far. This, it just seems common sense from a business sense as well as from a societal sense for Dan Snyder, who owns the Redskins, to say, I better just do it. Now, he's digging his feet in the ground and saying, no, I'm going to keep this name, but eventually it's going to affect his bottom line. In this day and age, why would you do something that can be perceived as so offensive? And really, how can you defend it and say, well, it's not offensive?
Because every group, Ray, can plug themselves in to the situation and say, what if it were my group?
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Yes. So it's not only the fact that it's, you know, it's Native Americans, but it's also the fact that everybody else says, you know, this could be me too.
I don't see how he doesn't change it, and soon. You know, somebody on one of the news networks this morning, I forget which one, a sports lawyer said, you know, it may come down at some point to the players like RG3 and everything else, saying, I'm not going to put this on my back anymore.
This jersey is not going to be.
And that's a whole other situation.
I was wondering, first of all, the politics of this is interesting to me because Harry Reid is kind of leading the fight in the Senate on this. Reid and 49 other Democratic senators have urged the NFL commissioner to pressure the Redskins into changing the name. And Harry Reid cited action taken by the NBA and the lifetime ban to Donald Sterling because he made racist remarks and is saying this is a racist slur. I don't know. I mean, I agree with you two. I'm on your side on that. But it seems to me that's a little bit of a stretch.
Yeah.
It's not the same outright,
blatant
comment.
Yeah.
It's apples and oranges. That's not a
He's arguing. I mean, the Washington Redskins owner is arguing that it is not offensive. Nobody questions that Sterling's comments were offensive.
Right. You know? Absolutely. And Alan, I mean, I think you're absolutely right. It's just a matter of
it's inevitable.
Of when they're going to change it. So
sooner or later they got to do it.
Right.
And it seems to me that they probably have their people working now on alternative nomenclature.
Oh, absolutely. And the interesting thing, I mean, the irony here is the copyright protection. If this ruling is not, survives the appeal, the copyright protection for the Washington Redskins logo will no longer be there. So others could
use it
or others could make T-shirts and sell them and the feds would do nothing. There'd be no recourse for the Washington Redskins. If they change their name, they'll have a whole new line of jerseys and hats and logos to sell and it will be beneficial monetarily. I mean, isn't that interesting?
That's why I say Dan Snyder, who is a billionaire and he's made questionable, yes, idiotic football decisions. However, he is not a dumb businessman. Yeah. He will do A, what's probably morally right, and B, what's the best for his bottom line. C, what won't cost him in litigation. Because if he wants to fight it, he can. Well, how's he going to win?
There's a timing thing here. I mean, right? I mean, we're starting into a season. We're in a few weeks. We're going to be in training camp, and it seems like if they're going to do something, they should do it soon.
I don't think they could do it this quickly.
Well, but this is going to encourage other groups besides the Native Americans to, for example, the New York Yankees. Now,
For Pete's sake.
Now, as you know, the Yankees, the people came over very early. They got off the Mayflower. These people became Yankees, and I think they've got a beef.
The Braves, however.
Not, just kidding.
Well, the Cleveland Indians.
The Cleveland Indians. Sure. I mean, Braves. There are
but that's different, don't you think?
I do.
In other words, the Florida State Seminoles.
Yes.
From what I understand, and I don't know this to be an absolute verifiable fact, but I believe the Seminoles, the tribe, is on board with that because it's done in what they perceive to be a respectful way. And I believe that when their chief, what's-his-name, comes running into the field, they actually supply the head, the tribe actually supplies the headdress for this mascot to come in because it is what they perceive to be respectful. So I'm not sure the Braves and the Indians would have to change.
Well, but there'll always be somebody to take exception.
You're right.
Right? There'll always be somebody. Now Ted writes in and says, no joke, just consider. What if two people felt that the word giant, you're very tall, Joe, felt that the word giant.
It was pejorative?
It was an offensive dig at tall people. Then New York would change the name of their football team to ...
I think I've thought about that, and I think that's just goes too far.
How about you, Joe? Because you're the taller.
I'm.
You're not offended?
No.
Would you prefer Alan to have the New York Shorties?
Now you've gone too far. You've just gone too far.
Well, civility has left the room.
You do a series for 3 days. Don't think it's going to last.
Oh, what series?
You couldn't help yourself, could you?
No.
Yeah, all right.
All right, let's take a break. We'll have a palate cleanser, and we'll be back. Roundtable at WAMC.org.
Support comes from File Hardware and Paint, Troy, New York. Locally owned, offering hardware, paint, plumbing supplies, and more. Walking distance from the Troy Farmers Market. PFEILHardware.com. University at Albany hosting an information session on their weekend MBA program, Saturday, June 28th at 10 a.m. 518-956-8330. And the Lake George Dinner Theater presenting the comedy Lake Effects, running July 17th through October 11th. LakeGeorgeDinnerTheater.com for information and tickets. Thank you.
You know, we talk about precious things in our lives, and we talk about things that are very special and very dear and very meaningful to us as individuals. And for state workers, that is a parking spot. In New York State, that is a parking spot. And Mike is about to tell us a story about how you dole out 10,000 parking spaces to state agencies in New York State.
But also, he's going to give us the background, right, on how all this, how the local folks around the legislature and other places took great exception to the, quote, state workers. And I believe that's one word, state workers.
State workers.
or in New York State, one word also.
Also one word.
How they took exception and how that was, how that came about.
Well, the pressure's on you, Mr. Spain. Go ahead.
All right. You know, expert in all this is Jordan Carlio Evangelist, whose story today talks about a new effort to more fairly dole out 10,000 parking spaces that are controlled by individual state agencies now. It's all going to be controlled by the State Office of General Services. And they're not going to take away any permanent parking spots that people have been awarded already. But it may change
when
when they die or retire. They hopefully retire and have a good retirement.
Perhaps they have a heart attack.
Yeah.
Depending on their choices.
All stories are connected.
Can you see the governor up there on the second floor saying, let's see.
Okay. Yeah. Well, this situation has been exacerbated in recent years by the success in neighborhoods in Albany in getting through the legislature a trial permit parking system. Center Square, one of the neighborhoods around the state, Empire State Plaza and related neighborhoods now have permit parking where state workers cannot come in and park in their places, and when they come home at night, they can find a place to park their car and it won't be displaced by a state worker. So the state has built more parking garages and parking spaces in downtown Albany. They also have some shuttle buses to farther out parking spaces to try to get state workers in and out of the important offices that they, I mean, the offices that they have for the important work that they have to do. But interestingly, after July 1st, the Office of General Services will maintain one centralized waiting list based on workers' overall length of service, eliminating what officials are calling inconsistent and unfair, a crazy quilt of agency policies is how Jordan describes it.
A crazy quilt?
A crazy quilt. That's his term, not state officials. They said inconsistent and unfair, and he added the crazy quilt. But I think he accurately describes it. But they're going to use a website to work all this out. Now, they really have to pay attention to what happened with the rollout of Obamacare so that they don't repeat that.
What could go wrong?
No, it'll be fine.
But it's going
to... Get the Canadians in. They'll be good.
They're going to have a pool of about 8,500 slots, and workers will be able to be awarded those slots based on their seniority. So it'll hopefully make it easier and more predictable. There'll be a few losers, but over time, it will be a much more fair and much more orderly way of finding a place to park your car when you go to work.
Politics is the authoritative allocation of scarce resources, as I've said many times. Yeah. And giving out parking spaces is the ultimate in giving out scarce resources.
It is a political scientist's point of view, indeed.
This all goes online July 1st. And
they hope to have it up and running fully by the end of the year. Right now you have parking garages on both ends of the Empire State Plaza where some people are parking over on the north side of the old education building, and they have to walk all the way down to Madison Avenue, and then you get people parking on Madison Avenue that have to walk up.
You can't get there from here.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of complaints about the long distances that people have to walk, but just getting a parking place close to work is coveted. We take it for granted.
Or you can pay on the street. You know, they have these new things. You put the credit card in, you get the thing out.
It's fairly expensive.
You put it in your windshield. It costs you a lot of money, but it's good because you can almost always get a parking space.
Yeah, it's a good system. And somebody was pointing out that just as a sidebar to this, that new parking system for Albany and Schenectady and Troy are also adding those. Used to be you could kind of troll around and you might find somebody who had a half an hour left on the meter, right? None of that anymore.
Yeah. I wonder how they're handling it in Massachusetts over towards Springfield or Connecticut, Northwest Connecticut, where a lot of people listen to the show.
Yeah. But don't have parking meters?
Yeah, but I'm saying, what do I care about this?
Well, you don't have to carry a pile of quarters in your glove box or anything now. You can just use your credit card, and more municipalities are doing it. I'm sure the great state of Massachusetts has examples of this.
Anyone in the room excited about the Amazon Fire Phone?
Well, they have to explain it to everybody that it's a new phone that Amazon is putting out, and the concept is that you'll be able to get Amazon products a lot easier using that phone.
Just one press away, but it has a lot of bells and whistles that are pretty cool as well, which is bringing people into the fold. They have signed an exclusive deal with AT&T. And obviously putting a lot of money into it, so it'll be interesting to see what happens.
But the older we get, like me,
yes,
is it likely that we're going to start fooling around with new products when we just gotten to learn how to use the iPhone?
Well,
that's
true. People tend to stick with the brand phone that they have. That's what. That's why Apple and Samsung seem to have the monopoly on the worldwide market. But this is interesting. And the story that you sent us, Joe, to talk about was in the Washington Post, which is owned by Jeff Bezos. You know, I thought
that is why I included it.
But I mean, they have a great, subheadline. Forget point and shoot. This is point and shop. You'll be able to point this at an object, and it will go find it on Amazon and tell you how much it costs. And if you hit a button, you can order it.
Let's see if I understand that. So, in other words, I can take my phone, I can point it at Ray, and they can tell me if I can buy Ray.
Right. You bought me long ago. You know, isn't this a symbol of a symptom of a diseased society that we even care about a new gadget?
I agree.
I think when the technology changes our culture and changes the way we do fundamental things, I think that's worth discussing.
Yeah, now I agree with you.
Mm. All right. Now with all this agreement, we're out of time.
And civility has returned.
Absolutely. Fine. And now we sing off into the sunset.
Anymore. Because if I agree with him, I can't agree with him.
Or sunset. Thank you very much, Michael, Ray, Alan. You'll all be back tomorrow. We'll talk. We'll have fun. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.